Terry, age 52, began smoking in high school. At 40, she was diagnosed with oral and throat cancers and had her larynx removed. Terry never thought smoking would do this. You can quit. Terry, age 52, began smoking in high school. At 40, she was diagnosed with oral and throat cancers and had her larynx removed. Terry never thought smoking would do this. You can quit. Talk with your doctor for help or for free help to quit, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. Sponsored by the Texas Department of State Health Services.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Drive Through HR. Thank you very much for giving us some time today. We have a wonderful guest, one of my absolute favorites in the space. We're going to learn a lot today. So just go ahead and get ready. Get your notepad out. Go ahead and just kind of get ready to learn, get some knowledge broken down for you. Jason, how are you doing today, brother?
Hey, I'm awesome. How are you?
Look, you're awesome all the time, but how are you doing today? Is it different?
Today I'm even better because I was at the, for those of that followed me on Facebook, I was at the Timberwolves game, and the Timberwolves won last night against the Heat. So my two kids, who are big NBA fans, they actually got to celebrate a win. So I'm even better today.
There's nothing like celebrating a win because, you know, after a loss, it's the drive home that you have to explain. Well, you know, they played hard and some things didn't go their way. Remember that ref call, you know, this, that, and the other. But a win, it's like you don't have to go through any of that stuff.
It is, except my kids, you know, we're so used to losing here. My kids are big into the talent game, you know, as am I. So they actually want more ping pong balls in the lottery. So they would actually rather see a loss, I think, because of the ping pong balls than a win. So.
Dad, we should be tanking right now, right? I mean, when your sons know the concept of tanking, okay.
Yeah, exactly. We have no chance anyway. So anyway, all good.
Do us a favor. Obviously, people know you from both the PeopleSoft, Knowledge Intrusions, Aperio. They've known you for a long time in a lot of different ways. Do us a favor now and introduce yourself to the audience.
Thanks. So, Jason Averbuch, believe it or not, my name hasn't changed. Jason Averbuch. And the role I'm currently serving is CEO of an organization called PMBC, which is the Marcus Buckingham Company. And the Marcus Buckingham Company is an amazing organization that I am honored and privileged to have the opportunity to work with, you know, probably some of the most amazing people I've ever worked with in my life, who truly are on a mission and have a passion to think about how do we think about engagement and performance around the space differently, and how do we do it in a strengths-based approach versus a weakness-based approach. So often we're quick to jump on weaknesses, and so often we even will rate people based on how we feel about ourselves versus them. And I think that that's all wrong in the era that we live in today. This isn't the era where machines determine whether or not we do well. It's the era that knowledge and the knowledge economy and those types of things determine whether we do well. So, you know, TMBC, the organization that I lead, is all about really changing and shifting the way people think about talent, how people work, and how people measure and drive engagement to a different level. And that, to me, that's game-changing, and that's, as you know, for me, that's mega exciting.
Nice. You know, Marcus has got a big slot at Sherm Annual this year, and I've seen him speak a couple times, so I'm kind of excited. I'm gonna fly in for Sherm Annual and do a couple bits there, so I'm kind of excited to see kind of some of his newer stuff as well. So what's top of mind for you these days? What's keeping you up at night?
So keeping me up at night, so that's a great – I love that question. So one of the things that's most important to me, and the reason that someone say, why is an HR technology dude all of a sudden hanging out with Marcus Buckingham, you know, a strengths dude and a, you know, speaker about strengths and a speaker about making you feel good about the direction that you're going and where your career is going and how to perform better. What's keeping me up at night is the realization that a piece of technology will never solve the talent management issues that we have in the world. And the concepts and approaches will never solve the issues we have with the talent management in the world. So the biggest thing that's keeping me up at night is how do you combine coaching Leverage technology to be able to deliver a holistic approach to that. If you don't do that, you have a piece of technology that's naked sitting out there hoping to solve a problem, or you might have a speech from a Marcus or a coaching session from a coach that's sitting out there naked hoping that it somehow serves the purpose. Unless you actually tie that into addictive technology where you're actually saying, I'm going to use something every day, and it's going to measure me every day, and it's going to help me become better every day, and it's going to help me leverage my strength every day, the combination of the data with the education, the science, and the technology together is what truly has an opportunity to change talent management. And for me, what keeps me up at night, back to answering the question, is how do I move a whole space away from just counting on the technology to do a rating of 1 to 5 or just measuring engagement once a year to truly seeing that engagement drives performance. Engagement drives performance. And if we're measuring those in two separate places, chances are we're not going to be successful at all. So that's what's keeping me up.
Well, this is a great start, Jason. And in fact, this kind of reminds me a quote. In fact, not a quote, an entire blog that William has just wrote last week asking a question of what if employee engagement is somewhat tethered to the love-hate relationship employees have with the system they use for work. So up to you, you know, what's the relationship between, you know, employee engagement versus technology that they use?
So that's a great question, Nisa. So the digitization of everything we do from a tool standpoint definitely drives engagement. But what drives engagement more is the stupidity or the logic, or the value, I should say, behind the processes that are there that technology enables. So way too often, way too often, we get in trouble by rolling out a piece of technology and saying, hey, this technology is going to change engagement. Yeah, and guess what? The technology alone might help, and it might help to a few, maybe a percentage point. But what's going to make the big difference is ongoing, sustainable processes to truly say, if I'm having a check-in, as our software calls it, and as we coach, what we call it, that I'm able to see a huge increase in engagement. If I check in weekly, I'm able to see a huge increase in engagement. If I'm actually doing surveys and measuring, am I using my strengths? Am I feeling like I'm providing value in the workplace on a weekly basis? That's actually measuring engagement and driving engagement. So it's the collaboration leveraging technology that actually drives engagement. The technology alone doesn't. Now, bad technology tied to bad process can definitely kill engagement. But you know, bad process, even on good technology, isn't going to have an impact. It has to be good process and good approach tied with good technology to truly see the sort of bump that we're looking for in thinking about engagement differently.
So, Jason, let me roll an idea past you and get your take. I've said that performance management, at one point you have to pick a lane. It's either for the employees and their betterment, or it's for the company and its betterment. But it's rarely, at least practice, it's rarely both. And a lot of it, if you pick the lane of employees, the game is meeting them where they are. Like wherever they are, like, for, you know, how do you need your performance management? Do you need just positive? Do you need, you know, constructive criticism? Do you need it daily? Do you need it hourly? Do you need it every 6 months? Do you need it SMS? Do you want it over video? You want it in person? Like, I'm just going to meet you where you are. You tell me how you want performance. And that's making them better, and I think that logically tied to learning and development and succession and tied to a lot of other things kind of makes sense. But all too often, at least it's been practiced this way, performance management seems to be really a tool for the company. It's the only reason we do performance management in some regards is to make the company better. So first of all, shoot holes in all of that.
Yeah, so the concept is that what we're trying to do we thought about how do we take a performance appraisal and do a performance appraisal. And the number one reason that we originally started to do performance management and performance appraisals were to be able to justify or to give people salary increases or merit increases. And that was it. There was never any thought that by giving someone a 3 or a 4 or a 5, all of a sudden the performance was going to skyrocket. You know, it was truly a performance appraisal as a way to justify a merit increase so that companies didn't get sued when it came to union saying, hey, you don't have any justification to give this person an increase or not an increase. So, or if you think about the first and second generations of performance management, and this still makes me laugh as I talk to people about performance management today, it was never to actually drive performance. It was a way to give someone a rating that might tie to their performance and justify some sort of a merit increase based on what they actually think about how that person's doing, maybe. So there's a lot of maybes. And this is why when people look at performance data and actually try to use it, like, guys, you're looking at the wrong data. You're not even a 3 to a 4 versus a 5 tied to a merit increase, and everyone thinks a 3 is different than a 4 than a 2. Those are all screwed up data. So when people say, wow, I can't even run a report, well, thank God you can't run a report, because the data that if you do run the report wouldn't be the right data. It would be the wrong data. So there's two answers to that question. A, you have to put tools that drive performance and engagement together at the local level. You have to put tools that drive performance and engagement together at the local level, which means down at the employee level. Okay, and I don't mean down in a derogatory way, but we're, you know, where we're actually being able to impact things. Now, the other thing that we have is companies needing data to be able to justify merit increases and to do salary changes and things like that. And that's more stuff that HR, you know, has worked with for a long time. But most people, if you ask them what they think of their performance management process, they'll tell you, oh, it sucks. Even in HR, they'll tell you, it sucks. You know, if we think about the whole concept of driving performance, it happens at that local level. So, William, I completely agree with you that it's a combination of both. Hopefully, HR in the future realizes that, you know, it doesn't have to do those processes like it does. There's other ways to drive compensation. There's other ways to look at talent data. And to me, the revolution that I'm personally on and we're on at CNBC is to start that and to get that out there tied to this whole concept that I talk about in my book, which is called The Measure of Now, which is let's look at performance now. Let's look at engagement now. Let's not look at it once a year. Let's not look at it backwards. Let's look at it now.
So the relationship between engagement and performance is beautiful, and y'all are going to shine a big, giant light on that and get people to understand the connectors. And I love the idea of data, education, science, and technology and kind of mirroring all of those cables together and really putting these two things happen together, or they don't happen. But as you go through this, I want you to kind of give us some insight in, are there certain positions where it's easier to do this? Are there certain industries where it's easier to do this? And really, I'm looking for the things that are harder. Like, it's actually harder to kind of show the relationship between this and this, but it's easier over here. If we look at, let's say, salespeople. You know, salespeople, it's really easy to understand that relationship between engagement and performance. So take us into the world where you're trying to bring those things closer together and show that relationship and where it's easy and where it's difficult.
So William, in the world we live in today where I think consumerism and the voice of the customer and the love that's required to show a customer is so huge that engagement is everywhere. It's in hospitals. Some of our largest clients are healthcare organizations who are trying to say, you know, our people are leaving unless they feel engaged at work. And the way they feel engaged at work is being having very clear lines of communication, A, and then B, knowing that everyone's working together on a team to meet A, B, and C goal. That's healthcare. If I'm thinking about retail, I'll share a real example with you. Last night after the basketball win, I took my kid to Culver's. Culver's is a fast food restaurant up here in the Midwest. I'm in Minneapolis today. And they had a special on double fudge cookie dough custard. How's that sound, William? Double fudge cookie dough custard. So, you know, we walk in, and my son, you know, who's 10, who doesn't get this very often, Timberwolves don't win very often, therefore he doesn't get the custard very often. But when they do win, you know, he walks in and says to the employee, "Hey, what's the special custard today?" The guy goes, "Double fudge cookie dough." And my son goes, "Excuse me?" He goes, "Double fudge cookie." And it sounded like a robot. Like, there was, my son had no desire to even stay there for the dessert based on how lack of excited this dude was about his job and working there. So whether it's quick serve restaurants, whether it's healthcare, whether it's airlines, which we know, you know, we can tell very quickly who's engaged and who's not, hotel workers, William and I, you and I know how hotel workers are. This is everywhere. Now, the question of measurement and the actual impact, now that's going to be really, really interesting. And for me, you know, William, you saw me speak, I think it was in Australia where we talked about this, where I said data is sexy. And, you know, I've been on this mission for a while and trying to get people to become data scientists and saying, guys, you have to think about how do you correlate data in order to truly understand it. So long term, what we'll be doing is saying, let's look at engagement. And engagement increased 8 points. Blah, blah, blah. So what? But when I go to my CEO and say engagement increased 8 points, and at that same time, we sold 3 times as much double fudge cookie dough custard, or we sold 3 times as many licenses to so-and-so, that's really where the impact comes into play. So, you know, I think that a lot of us have been trying to measure performance management and look at the rating and saying somehow that we're going to be able to correlate that to activities. But the rating has been wrong. So where we're at now is we've finally figured out what actually drives performance and engagement, and that's making them symbiotic and keeping them together. Now if we can take that data and tie it back to business data, we'll truly be able to show that impact. So I think it touches every single industry. I don't think there's one industry that this doesn't touch. I think what's important, though, is that we make the technology what we call addictive. And when I say addictive technology, or when we say addictive technology, that means whether I'm on my iWatch and I'm just saying, hey, I used my strengths this week and I feel like I added value. 5-5, done. And the whole, my leaders can see exactly how I feel. Or I didn't. I didn't use my strengths. I'm not adding value. 1-1, done. And all of a sudden, I as a leader see I have a disengaged workforce. Act on it now. Because if you don't act on it now, every minute you don't act on it, you're losing customers. You're losing customers. And we can't afford to do that. So, you know, to me, it's all about that concept of being able to measure the impact, understand the impact, and then act on the impact in a real-time basis. You know, I always use the example, like, if you ever only measured how much Coke got into a bottle once a year, and, you know, day 2 out of 365, all the Coke started spilling on the floor, you know, what would happen? You'd waste a lot of Coca-Cola. The same thing here. If I'm not understanding engagement and performance on a real-time basis, yeah, I might go a whole year with some cancer and some problems in the organization that I should be able to stop immediately.
Well, in order to act on that, you know, disengagement on a real-time basis, I would guess managers and then the team leaders have a great role when it comes to treating their employees well, right? So what do you suggest, you know, in order to have a personalized approach that every team leader should give to their employees so that they will act the way that they would expect them to be acted?
Yeah, so Nisha, it's a great question. So one of the big things that our coaching and our approach does, as well as our technology, is sort of recognizes, I shouldn't say sort of, it does recognize the fact that everyone has certain strengths. So the way that we kick off work with our customers is every employee, every team leader who's actually using our process, which is an approach plus the technology, takes an assessment. And that assessment shows them their top 2 strengths. Now, myself, as a team leader, I know my strengths. My employees know their strengths. And what I'm doing is teaching the team how to work together in the most optimal way. So, example, if I'm an using strengths language, standout language, if I'm a stimulator creator, those are my roles. If I know that, then I know that when I'm working with someone who's not that and they're something else, let's say they're a teacher and an influencer, that the way that I need to work with them is different, because a teacher influencer really cares about being out there, putting ideas out there, thinking differently about things. They're trying to influence and they're trying to teach. So if I know at an individual level how best to work with my team members, A, and then B, I continue to drip them content, personalized to them. Drip them content, personalized to them. That's what makes it personalized. So you know, one of my favorite quotes, one of the people I like in the space a lot, I didn't know what to call him, hero, idol, mentor, besides you, William, Anisha, is Josh Burson.
Oh.
You know, and one of the things that Josh Burson says is, the war for talent is over and the talent has won. You know, and when he says it, he says won, W-O-N. I think that the war for talent is over and the talent has won, but the way we need to think about the future of talent is one equals one. And one isn't W-O-N, it's O-N-E. I have to personalize the way that I work with people. I have to personalize the way that I actually drive things forward. And if I just do a peanut butter spread, if I just do a peanut butter spread that doesn't tie into strengths, then all of a sudden all I'm doing is throwing a bunch of stuff at the wall and hoping it's driving some sort of talent success. So, you know, to me, Nisha, I have to be able to understand who the people are on my team, what their strengths are. Strengths are truly, truly important. And then at the same time, be able to tie things to them on a one-to-one basis. So it's the personalization of talent that I truly think is where this whole space is going.
All right, let's pivot over to the board and investors for a moment. You interact with
this group. You want to talk more about ice cream?
Yeah, right. No, I actually like ice cream. I'm comfortable, extremely comfortable in ice creams. What you interact with these folks all the time, what should they be paying attention to in terms of HR metrics? At the end of the day, when you interact with investors and they're curious about what they should be looking at or measuring or having a feel for, and board members are much the same way because they have fiduciary duty, what advice do you give them?
Yeah, so and this is a setup question, William, I think. But I'll answer it the way that I'm going to answer it. So I don't think board members – I think we did this on stage in Australia. I don't think board members should pay attention to HR metrics at all. I think HR metrics are the biggest waste of time for boards in the world. HR metrics are for me. When I'm in HR, when I'm sitting in my bedroom, when I'm looking in the mirror and I'm just standing there in my whatever I'm wearing – you know, I'm looking at myself and think, wow, I'm looking a little flabby, or I'm not very – that's a terrible picture I'm painting. Sorry, William. I'm not very good at this. I'm not very efficient. I'm not very effective. You know, I think that my cost per hire is a little bit high. I think my turnover is a little bit low. Those are all things for me. But that's me as in HR looking at myself in the mirror. But what I present to the board and what board members care about – is exactly what we were talking about before, is so what? So what? What is the impact of the fact that my cost per hire is high? What's the impact of the fact that my time to fill is low? What's the impact of the fact that, you know, I'm doing performance management once a year? I think that performance management done once a year is the most insane thing in the world. I mean, think about measuring anything. Measuring it once a year, that's like watching paint dry. It once a year, and if you say, wow, people are our most important asset, yet I only look at them once a year, it's stupid. And it's not HR's fault that it's stupid. It's where the world has come from, and it's the fact that the technology was never there to drive it forward. So, William, now that I can measure the impact of people on business like never before through big data, that's what needs to be shown at the board level, A. And the other thing that needs to be shown at the board level is the only thing that drives competitive advantage in the business world today is talent. Period. The only thing that drives advantage. is talent. And if you don't have that talent, and you're not keeping that talent, you know, you're not going to have that advantage. So, I mean, talk about talent. Don't talk about how good or bad you are from an HR perspective. Nisha, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No problem. That was an amazing discussion that is going on, and I didn't want to interrupt you at all. So we all knew at this point that measuring once in a year is going to a triple. How about not knowing the trouble of measuring what is matter? Measuring what matters most.
Right. So the question is how do you know what matters most?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we have to do is we have to realize that from an HR standpoint or even from a business standpoint, our job isn't necessarily to measure what matters most. Our job is to measure whether people are A, doing the things that they do great, and B, loving the company that they're doing it for. If people are doing the things that are their strengths and people think that they're adding value, what the actual tactical things that they're doing are important, but those are the tactics. That's not the actual thing we should be measuring. What we should be measuring is how are they feeling, how are they doing, are they adding value? Now, we should be, you know, for example, the technology that we deploy to customers at CNBC, we have something called check-in, where people do weekly check-ins. And during that weekly check-in, they talk about what are their priorities for this week and what are the things that they should be doing. What the check-ins allow leaders to do is to guide them. Okay, it doesn't tell them exactly what to do, but it allows us to guide them. And what that does is it gives people a big barbed wire fence to run around in, but at the same time doesn't let them run into that barbed wire fence and cut off their whatever it is. So, you know, I think that the important thing to realize is that if people are engaged and people are doing the things that they like to do, they're going to do their job really, really well. And what our job is to make sure that they're engaged and doing their job really well. And if we're tracking what their priorities are and just doing little corrections here and there to point them in the right direction, it's amazing how aligned we'll see things. One of the things, if you remember 3-4 years ago that happened in the space, is everyone became goal-obsessed. Do you remember that? Well, we have to have goals. We have to have top-down goals. We have to have alignment from top to bottom. Well, guess what? Organizations realized that was almost impossible. You know, this is saying, hey, we're putting in place a baseline and we're putting in place a foundation to be able to show and make sure that people are working on the things that matter and that they're doing it in a way that they love what they're doing and that they're engaged, which is driving performance. But we're not looking at every single item and saying, hey, how are you doing in this? 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 You know, it's not like gymnastics and the judges where we're looking at every single move. It's we're guiding their future. We're guiding their career. And we're doing it in a way that's keeping them, A, very engaged, and, B, continuing to teach them how best to leverage their strengths in the workplace. Instead of criticizing them because we remember one thing that they did wrong 2 weeks ago, and therefore we're going to give them a 3 versus a 4. Just think about it. Just think about the impact of real-time coaching, real-time feedback, real-time engagement versus once a year, I remember what you did last week. It wasn't good, so I'm going to give you a 1. You almost can't get at two opposite ends of the spectrum. And for those organizations that do measure people once a year or engagement once a year, they're fighting a losing game right now.
Well, Jason, obviously we blew through this in 30 minutes, and it felt like about 4 minutes, and it always does. The Marcus Buckingham Companies, TMBC, I really, really, the thing that sticks with me from this call is the way that you articulated data, education, science, and technology. And, you know, the pulling all of those together and leveraging the best parts of all four of those things is probably the future of TMBC, quite frankly. If I were to put on my Swami hat, I would assume that's really kind of y'all's future in one shape or form.
From a DNA standpoint, it's the combination of education, coaching, technology. Education, coaching, technology. You need all of that in real time to be successful. Where can you find me? You can find me on Twitter, at Jason Averbrook. You can find me on LinkedIn, or you can go to our website, cnbc.com.
And get his book.
Good gosh,
and,
people.
Oh,
go
oh,
buy
yeah,
a book.
Yeah,
it's on Amazon.
Yeah, the book is out there also. And by the way, my my partner in crime, Marcus, has some brilliant books out there as well. We have a standout is one of Marcus's latest books, and we're actually republishing it as part of done by HBR in June of this year as part of the SHRM launch, William. So
awesome.
You know, look for Standout 2.0 coming in June as well.
I'll get a signed copy is what I just heard there, ladies and gentlemen. Jason,
as long as we go out for ice cream.
Truth. I'm ready. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Drive Through HR today. Wonderful show. Could have spent another hour and a half with Jason. Jason, thanks for your time. Know how busy you are. Everyone, have a wonderful afternoon, and we're going to roll out to a little Pharrell. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.
But she said she would take a look at it and make sure it's working. So I told her if she had any feedback, yeah.